Good morning. It's time for the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
Good morning. This is Debbie Verney.
And this is Jane Marie Schaefer.
And we're two of the attorneys at the Herzog Law Firm. We're going to be here for the next hour to answer your questions on estate planning, estate administration, and Medicaid planning. And you could be our very first caller at 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900. Good morning, Jane Marie.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. The sun is out. There's blue skies. What more could you ask for other than, like, 70-degree weather, right?
That's right. I think it is going to get a little bit warmer this week. Hey, about freezing is something to be happy about, right?
Definitely. But, you know, hey, we can't be picky. We just got to kind of roll with it, and it'll be spring soon. So last week we had, when Dan and I were on, is we only had one call during the first half hour, but the second half hour was just person after person after person. So if you want to get your call in and you're listening out there, you should probably call in the first half hour because it tends to pick up once people get up and get their coffee and get going. But again, the phone number here is 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900. We had a whole week of webinars this week, and we had a new webinar that you did this week, right, Jane Marie?
Yes, we added a new topic, and this is for our clients who don't like the cold, right?
So right.
We have many clients who have a second home in a warmer climate, you know, for the retirees. So we did a webinar about tax and legal planning considerations if you have a home in two states. So that was really great. A lot of people had really great questions there. It's a really important topic for a lot of our people. I don't blame them. I hope to be in a warmer climate when I retire.
Yeah, definitely. I don't blame them either. But a lot of people are confused and think that, you know, it's not a big deal to have a house here and a house there and no documents. So what happens if someone has, say, a house here and a house in Florida and then they pass away?
Right. That's a good question. And they haven't done anything. They have to do a probate in two different states. And so we often talk about how bad probate is just in one state, right? It's costly. It takes time. And then imagine having to do that all over again in a second state. So that's a pretty tough situation. So there's a bunch of ways you can avoid that. The best way to avoid that is to use a trust because trusts avoid probate. And most clients will think that you can't have a, you know, Florida house in a New York trust, but you can do that. You can put anything that you want into your New York trust. So if you were to put both houses into your New York trust, you would avoid probate on both of those houses.
Debbie, Jay Marie,
mm-hmm.
We have our first caller. It's Paul in Ballston Spa.
Oh, great.
Good morning, Paul.
Good morning. I have about three questions.
Okay.
One, if I have irrevocable trust and I move money from a IRA account, like you have to every year after you're 70 or 72 now, does the five-year look-back period start all over every time I move money every year into a non-IRA account?
Well, it doesn't start the five-year look-back on anything else except for that new deposit, right? So if you did your trust back in 2020, those assets are going to be protected in 2025. If you put extra money in 2021, then those new assets wouldn't be protected to 2026. Each additional deposit that you make is going to have its own separate five-year look back.
Okay. If I close out one account because I don't like it in that's in the fund in the irrevocable trust, and I buy another one, does that start the five-year look-back period over because I sold one, bought another one?
No, because it's still in the trust. So basically what you would do, let's just say, for instance, you wanted to move your brokerage account. Let's say I have an account at Fidelity that's in my irrevocable trust and now I want to move it to Merrill Lynch, I basically would have Fidelity write the check to the trust and then open the new account at Merrill Lynch in the name of the trust and then just deposit the check. It would have the exact same look back as the account because you never took it out of the trust. You just put a new asset in.
Okay. If I make out a TOD, a transfer on death form, does that protect the money from going to probate?
So like a TOD account, like at a bank?
Or in a brokerage account.
Yes, that will protect it from probate, but it doesn't protect it if somebody had to go into a nursing home.
Okay, it doesn't protect it from a nursing home. It just protects it from probate, though.
Exactly.
All right.
Those are all great
questions. My questions. Okay.
Thanks. Have a great weekend.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Bye. You know, those are great questions. I had another attorney call me this week that doesn't do a lot of estate planning, and she had a client where the husband passed away, and then within 45 days, the wife passed away, and they didn't have a chance to transfer all the assets from the husband to the wife, even though she was like the beneficiary. And so we were talking about how they would now have to probate the wife's estate in order to get those assets. And then she like put another twist in it. She goes, well, the problem is that the trustee of the trust and the executor of the will are two completely different people. And apparently the executor of the will is not not in good graces with the rest of the family. So, so it's like, what do you do in that instance? What do you think, Jay Marie?
That's a tricky situation. I mean, that happens all the time, I should say, more frequently than we would like, you know. But basically, the executor has to follow the wishes, you know, of their parents and what they wrote in the will. And we, you know, we help them with that. We send out the information to the other beneficiaries. We give them an accounting. We ask them to sign receipt agreements. We try and make it all as transparent as possible to minimize any conflict. But, you know, and also we tell people that if you're going to fight a will or fight the accounting, it's going to cost a lot of money to have many lawyers involved in a dispute. So we're going to try and see what, you know, really is the dispute about and how can we resolve it without going to litigation.
Yeah, because that's the last thing you want to do is have to litigate something like that. And we try to make it as seamless as possible. We try to get people to name beneficiaries and put things in trust like we were talking about before so that everything's more seamless. Unfortunately, these were assets that wouldn't have gone into a trust. They were from work, you know, from his work. So,
right. Well, another thing you can do to avoid that is we always ask you to check all your beneficiary designations, and that's something that you kind of forget to do. You know, your work beneficiary, maybe you signed up for that 20 years ago or something, and it may have been someone different, right? It may have been your parents and you're married now, so it needs to be your spouse or your kids. So it is important to update those beneficiaries as time goes on, or you know, or whenever you update your estate plan, you should update your beneficiaries.
Especially if someone died or you got divorced or something like that. That could be a real glitch, huh?
Yeah, that's right. It's happened more than once where someone gets divorced and they forget to change the beneficiaries on some accounts. Now, the divorce does sever that relationship, but it can be troublesome, and we do have a hard time sometimes with the companies. You know, we have to trying to get them to recognize that they're divorced and the spouse is no longer the beneficiary.
Yeah, that's difficult. I wanted to mention we do have two more webinars this month. The month is coming to an end. It's such a short month. Wednesday, we have February 24th at 10 a.m. We have planning for when a loved one has special needs. And at 2 in the afternoon is estate planning and prime time. So those are two good webinars you can sign up for. You can go to www.herzoglaw.com. You can sign up for those. And you can also call the office, talk to Stacy. She can sign you up for them. And we have a whole new batch of webinars coming out in March, and those should probably be up by Monday, I would guess, for all the new webinars for March.
Yes, that's right. And if you if you're looking at this list and there was one that interested you, you can go to our blog page, and we have pre-recorded webinars. So you can always catch up on one that you missed that you want to watch. And that's great to also share with your friends or your family members. If they can't make it at that time, then you can say, all right, here, you can go on and watch this at night.
Yeah, it's a great opportunity to just take your time and watch it at your leisure, you know? Get the popcorn out, get your soda, right, and watch your... It's like Netflix. You can sit and watch your estate planning webinars. But we do these because we want people to know what's out there. And it's funny because I've had people that have come in that have gone to the webinars, and they're like, and in your webinar, I heard this and I heard that. And I'm like, okay. And it's great because it educates people before they come in, so they know the right questions to ask.
Yeah, it does. It really gives them kind of a background so that they are educated consumers, right? I hate that phrase, but so they know kind of a little bit about estate planning so they're not starting from scratch. And a lot of people like to do that because once we get into estate planning, there's this whole language that we use for estate planning. That's not everyday language, right? We're going to say executor and fiduciary, and then the one that everyone gets wrong is per stirpes.
Per stripes?
Yes, per stripes is what most people call it. Right?
When they say that, all I can think of is fruit stripe gum. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
I don't know why, but that's what comes to mind. So, but we'd love for you guys to give us a call at 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900. You can be our second caller.
Well, as a matter of fact, we have our second caller right now.
Look at that.
We have Barb from Westmere.
Good morning, Barb.
Good morning, everyone. I have a question about small estates. If someone's estate is so small that it's been, how can I put this? There's nothing left to distribute, okay? Everything has been distributed, or with the bank accounts, we had a payable on death, you know, a beneficiary on all the bank accounts. So there's nothing to probate, but the estate is receiving some small residual refunds from utilities and pensions and things like that. But it's the checks are made out to the estate of the deceased. How do those checks get cashed and go into the estate?
Well, that's a little bit tough when it's a small amount like that. Because, you know, the right way to handle that, I suppose, would be to do a small estate proceeding so you could get a certificate to open up an estate account to deposit those checks in there. Sometimes if you have one of those joint accounts still open, you're able to deposit the check there, but that doesn't always happen. So the next step would be to do the small. Now, on the small estate proceeding, it's a much easier form than the full probate. And you would just list the checks that you received there, and they would give you letters to allow you to open up an estate account.
Okay. All right. Okay. Well, thank you very, very much. Have a great weekend.
You too.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. You know, that's a great question because I have a lot of people that just have small things like maybe a couple shares of stock, and they're like, well, what do I do? Is it worth it to actually even probate the person's will or go through an administration for a couple shares of stock?
Mm-hmm. And sometimes it isn't, right? If your couple shares of stock are less than, I mean, sometimes they're only a couple hundred dollars. And, you know, if you have to pay legal fees to do a small estate proceeding, it may be more than that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but this—I mean, he or she already has the checks in hand, so we didn't ask how much they were. But depending on how much they are, it may be worth doing the small estate proceeding.
Maybe, and that's the problem. It's these things come in after a person passes away, especially if, say, they had an apartment or something, and all of a sudden you're canceling their cable and their utilities, and you're getting all these refund checks and stuff. Where are you going to put them? So you need to make sure that, you know, we kind of think ahead and maybe mm-hmm. leave an account open so that you can deposit them if they came in that person's name.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. That's one way to do it, or to make, or when you, like, cancel a lease or something, maybe they can have the refund payable to you as a surviving heir. There's an affidavit that we use frequently for small estates. It's called a 1310 affidavit. And you can give this affidavit to banks and other places if you're the surviving spouse or children. And they can give you up to $30,000 if you're the spouse, or up to $15,000 if you're the children. They can give you that money with just this affidavit, and you don't have to go to court.
Which saves you a lot of money.
It does. It does. Now, some places aren't as familiar with this affidavit, and they get some pushback. You know, you call the bank, and they want, we need something from probate court, right? We need letters of testamentary. And then we have to explain to our client, you know, or we have to call the bank for them and say, no, we're not doing probate, there's no estate, but there is this affidavit, and you're required basically to accept this. So sometimes it has to go up a few rungs up the ladder at the bank to get approval.
Ladies?
Yes.
We have another caller. We have David from East Greenbush.
Good morning, David.
Good morning. My question is, are the assets in a revocable trust, in this case a CD, are they protected if one enters a nursing home?
They are not. Unfortunately, a revocable trust, because you're your own trustee and you can kind of reach in and take stuff out and put stuff in and do whatever you want to, because you can write yourself a check, you can write the nursing home a check. So anything right. that's in a revocable trust would be available to pay for your care.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. Well, that was an easy question. A lot of people are confused about the difference between a revocable and an irrevocable trust, don't you think, Jamie?
They are, you know, and why do they make the names so similar, right?
Kind of like Medicaid and Medicare, right?
Right, that's, again, too similar. It's hard. You can confuse the names, but there's a big difference, because irrevocable trusts do offer a lot of protection for your assets. And revocable trusts don't, you know, but revocable trusts give you a lot of control over the assets. But I would say for the most part, we are doing irrevocable trusts, because that asset protection is more important to people.
Well, you get asset protection and you avoid probate. So it's two for one, as opposed to the revocable trust that basically avoids probate.
Mm-hmm. That's correct. That's right. Yeah, they both avoid probate, but one, you also get the asset protection piece.
So what do you think about, what if somebody owns an LLC, or they own an S-Corp or a C-Corp or something like that? How should they do their estate planning to make sure that there's no probate if they passed away, so that the business can still continue?
Yeah, that's a good question. I was talking to someone yesterday about it. She had rental properties, and we talked about putting it in an LLC, because LLCs give you protection against lawsuits, right, if someone gets mm-hmm. injured on your rental property. And she's like, oh, okay, so then I don't have to worry about protecting it or probate. I'm like, no, and now you still have to do that added step on top of that of doing a trust. And then you could transfer your LLC interests into the trust. Because an LLC ownership or a corporation ownership, it's just like another asset that you own. So you have to either take care of that asset by your trust or by your will. And you can transfer shares of your corporation into the trust just by signing an assignment. So that's what we recommend people do if you have LLCs or corporate interests.
What about timeshares?
Oh, God, timeshares. If you know someone who wants to buy them,
I have really so give clients. Us a call, right? We've got lots of clients that want to sell theirs.
That's right, we do. If you want to buy timeshares, we'll help you. It's isn't it? It's strange. So many of our clients can't get rid of their timeshares.
No, but and a lot of them use them, though. A lot of them, actually, I've had them where they transfer them to a trust so that they make sure that they can go down to the next generation.
Oh, yeah, sure. That's a great situation. If they are using them, you can put it in a trust. But on the other hand, if you're not using it anymore and you want to sell it, that's a tough situation.
And there's a lot of scammers out there, too, on that.
Yes, you have to be careful of that, right? I mean, it's probably best to call the place where you bought the timeshare from and see if they'll buy it back from you. Yeah. Or
right.
If you're going to use another company, yeah, make sure you're not getting scammed.
Yeah, because a lot of them say they will sell it for you or they'll do whatever, and then they take your money and run. I've had a lot of clients that have called me about that. So you have to be really, really careful.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
So let's see. We've had a whole, three callers? Anyway, so you could be our next caller at 518-476-5900, 518-476-5900. And you could be the next caller before the break, or you can give us a call after the break, which is going to be in a few minutes.
Yes, that's right. We have to show the girl power that the girls get the most calls.
That's it. And Ben has on his pink headphones so he can hang with the girls.
Mm-hmm.
I do indeed.
You can send some good vibes our way.
That's right.
That's it.
I know we haven't seen Ben in almost a year, right?
Exactly.
I can't believe it will be almost a year that we've been doing this radio show remote.
It's wild. It's I miss driving in and seeing Ben.
Isn't that scary? That's scary that you admit that after 11 months. God, I miss seeing Ben.
Well, I miss your smiling face.
Although we did see you a couple of weeks ago because we went over all our stuff. So we did see you on a Zoom call, but it's not the same.
Right, we did. And that's a thing, too, we need to mention to our clients. I mean, we are doing a lot of Zoom calls where we're going over documents with our clients that, you know, have already executed documents, but they want to make sure that they say what they want them to say, or they just need a little refresher, and we're doing Zoom calls, we're doing phone calls, conference calls. The Zoom calls work out great because a lot of times if people come in and sign documents and then we mail documents out to the trustees and such, we never really develop a relationship with the trustee, but with Zoom, a lot of families have been able to have their trustee join in on the Zoom call, and we can make sure that everybody's kind of on the same page. It's been a great opportunity.
Yeah, it has been. And also some clients have the trustee on because they need help getting on Zoom, but that's all right. You know.
That's true.
But we don't say it as much because we've been doing it for 11 months, but we do Zoom appointments all the time. We can notarize or witness your documents by Zoom. And we've been doing that a lot for clients who can't meet in person. And recently, I did a document execution for a client who was in a nursing home. And because no one's allowed to go in the nursing home, they had the social worker at the nursing home put this person up on Zoom so I could see her sign the papers.
Right.
That's been our workaround to get people who are in nursing homes or assisted livings to sign documents. And it's really important.
Yes, and it is. And we are still making house calls.
Mm-hmm.
If there's somebody that can't get out and somebody that can't do Zoom or FaceTime or anything like that, we'll actually go to the person's house. But it has to be one of those situations where, you know, everybody has to be masked and everything. There's the same rules that we have whenever you come into our office. Everybody has to wear a mask. Everybody hand sanitizes. I laugh whenever people walk in Saratoga. We have one of those dispensers right outside of the door, and Terry's like, okay, take off your coat. Now sanitize your hands. Now you can go in the conference room.
I know that's part of our new protocol, I guess, right?
Mm-hmm, exactly.
We'll probably be saying that for quite a long time.
Well, and it's not necessarily a bad thing, but I'm going to be glad, I don't even know if that was good English or not, whenever things can open up again and people can get out of their homes.
Yes, no, that is great. And I know that our elderly clients will be happy to get out and see their grandchildren, their family members again. right? It's important. The other theme signing I did with a client, his dad was in a nursing home. And I guess he hadn't seen him in a while because, you know, you can only Zoom once in a while.
Right.
And when we got on the phone to do the POA, he's like, oh, my gosh, his dad had long hair and, like, a long beard.
Ladies, we have another caller. We have Carol from Schenectady.
Good morning, Carol.
Good morning. I was listening to the webinar yesterday. Just at the end, they started to talk about pooled income trust. I was wondering if you could elaborate on that a little bit.
Sure. So a pooled income trust is used if you're applying for community Medicaid, right, which is Medicaid where you get care in the home, and your income is higher than the allowed amount. So if your income is higher, you know, the allowed amount for community Medicaid is about $900 a month, you can put your excess income into the pooled income trust and use it to pay for your living expenses. So it's basically a way to qualify for Medicaid and then still keep use of your income by having the trust pay all your household living bills for you.
So if they pay all your bills for you, do mm-hmm. they just take that right out of your trust? Is it your money and they're just taking it out?
It's your money, but you have an account there. So they'll send you a statement. It's kind of like a bank account, right? They'll show what you put in, right, that your deposit every month, and then they'll show you what bills they paid for you. And you're going to have to send them copies of the bills so they know what to pay for you. But it is your money, even though it's held in this trust account.
So you put your estate in this pooled income trust?
No. You put your income every month. So if you were, if you had $2,000 of income a month, let's just use that for an example, Medicaid only lets you keep $900. So you would have to put that extra $1,100 into a trust every month. So you would set up your, you know, bookkeeping or your checking account, whatever, going forward so that you put $1,100, you send it to the trust every month. And then you ask the trust to pay some bills every month for you.
What happens if your bills are over the amount that you put in?
Then you have to split that up between the money that you are allowed to keep, right, the $900, and then the money that you send into the trust. So you're going to pick and choose what bills you send to the trust to pay. It may not be able to pay all of your bills, but you're going to pick what bills you want the trust to pay.
So they're not going to pay any more than what's there?
No, they're not. No, they're only going to pay what you choose to send them to pay.
Okay. It sounded like a great idea. If you put $2,000 in the trust every month and you have $2,500 in bills, that sounded like a good deal.
That sounds like a good deal. It's too good to be true, unfortunately.
I knew it was too good to be true. That's why I called. I said, gee, you put $2,000 in a month and you give them all your bills, you could go on a shopping spree and have a great time.
You could.
Send them all your bills. So you can only use what's there.
You can only use what's there. That's right.
So what is the benefit of having one of these?
So the benefit is that now you're eligible for community Medicaid, and you can have home health aides come into your home to help take care of you, and you won't have to pay for it. Medicaid will pay for it.
Oh, okay. What are the other benefits of community? Was it community Medicare?
Community Medicaid. I mean, that's the main bit of community Medicaid is when you need some, when you're at the point where you need help, you don't have to go into a nursing home. You can instead have care at home, and Medicaid will pay for it.
But you have to have this pooled income.
You do. Yep, you have to do that. Yep.
You have to do that. Mm-hmm. That sounds like a good idea.
It's a great idea, yeah, because you don't want to go to a nursing home, right?
Right. Is there a look-back period on that, too?
That's a great question because that law is changing. Right now, there's no look-back period, but sometime later this year, there's going to be a 2.5-year look-back period. That date, I can't give you an exact date. They keep pushing it back, you know, probably July 1st, maybe later. They're going to start enforcing this new look-back period.
And this is for the pooled income trust.
The pooled income trust you can do any time. The look-back period is for your assets. If you have excess assets that you need to put in a trust.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
All right, and we are at the bottom of the hour, so we're going to take our break right here. We'll be back with the second half of the Herzog Law Firm's Estate Medicaid Planning Hour coming up right after this.
You've been listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. Join us every week to learn more about protecting the assets you've worked hard for, options available for Medicaid planning, and more. With offices located in Corporate Woods in Albany, West Harrison Street in Saratoga Springs, Executive Woods in Clifton Park, and Flatbush Road in Kingston. Our attorneys are here to help you. If you'd like to schedule an appointment to speak with David, Jane Marie Harry, or Debbie, please call us during normal business hours, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. To contact us at our Albany office, call 518-465-7581. Our Saratoga Springs office at 518-581-8131. Our Clifton Park office at 518-952-4010. And our Kingston office at 845-338-6405. Let the Herzog Law Firm help you navigate a plan that works for you and your family. Now back to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
And we're back. This is Debbie Verney.
And this is Jane Marie Schaefer.
And we're two of the attorneys at the Herzog Law Firm. We're going to be here to answer your questions on estate planning, estate administration, Medicaid planning. And you could be our first caller this half hour at 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900. It was a busy first half hour.
It was. We had a lot of questions, really good questions, and we hope we get as many our second half hour.
Right. We would love to answer your questions if you have questions about estate planning, estate administration, Medicaid planning. Also, we have webinars this week on Wednesday, 10 a.m. on February 24th, which is Wednesday, planning for when a loved one has special needs, and 2 o'clock is estate planning in prime time. So the planning for when a loved one has special needs, Jane Marie, what's that one about?
So that's a webinar about if you have someone in your family that has a disability, it's more than likely that they're receiving some type of government benefits. They could be receiving, you know, SSI payments or Medicaid or, you know, some other type of special housing that's based on your income. You know, there's a whole range of benefits you could be receiving. And those benefits all have asset tests. So if that person then suddenly inherits money from their parents or their grandparents, they would not be eligible for those benefits anymore. So in this webinar, we talk about supplemental needs trusts. And those trusts are a way to shelter those assets and let your family members still receive the benefits that they need to receive.
Yeah, it's a great webinar because the people really don't understand. They say, okay, well, my daughter Sally has special needs and her brother Paul, I'm going to leave Paul everything and then Paul is going to take care of Sally. And that doesn't work.
That doesn't work, right? Well, a lot of people think that they had to just cut that person out, right? That they can't leave them anything. Are you going to trust Sally's brother to take care of her and give her all the money? Maybe, you know, maybe he's great, but I wouldn't leave that to chance. So instead, you could still leave half to each child and then have Sally's half be in a trust and have someone be a trustee for her.
And he could be the trustee.
Yeah.
And basically that, and a lot of people don't realize that that trust can pay for a lot of stuff, right? The special needs trust can pay for stuff that the government is not paying for, and they get still keep their benefits, but this trust could pay for their housing, it could pay for furniture. It could pay for just about everything. It just can't give them cash, right?
That's right. There's special rules you have to follow. And I met with someone on Thursday who, when they got this trust set up, they really weren't informed of the rules. So the mm-hmm. first thing they did was write out a check to cash. Which is pricey. And they did that three times. And then I guess Social Security caught on somehow. So we have to try and fix this. I mean, now they know going forward not to write any more checks to cash, but they have to kind of deal with Social Security about what they did already. So if you have these trusts, you have to get educated on the rules too, because you don't want to lose the benefits by doing a mistake like that.
Right. I always use the example. So say the person needs a new bed. So they go to the furniture store, they pick out the bed, and then the trustee goes and pays for it. You know,
yeah.
rather than
yeah.
saying, here's $1,000, go buy yourself a nice bed. You can't do that. So there are certain rules, but they're definitely a good vehicle to protect money and being able to benefit your child or your loved one, and then still get their benefits. So that's a good one to attend. And then estate planning in prime time, that's always kind of fun because that's relating our lives to TV shows.
That's right. Our lives are just like a TV show, right, Debbie?
Sometimes it's definitely a soap opera, that's for sure.
Right. But that helps you understand what these concepts that we're talking about, right? It kind of makes it more real when you can understand it with a particular family situation. And David does a great job with that of relating it to TV shows that he grew up with.
Well, that, you know, if you say he grew up with them, he'll say, no, I just saw them in reruns.
I know, that's right. Yeah,
that's right. But we'd love for you guys to give us a call. The phone number here is 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900. We'd love to get your questions on estate planning, estate administration, Medicaid planning. We've had some interesting estates that have come in. I had an estate that came in, and all of the property was in the husband's name, mm-hmm. and there was no will, and mm-hmm. there is a child. I mean, it's an adult child, but right. people don't understand that whenever you're married and you have property all in one person's name, and that person passes away without a will, it's not necessarily going to go to the spouse.
That's right. People are shocked to find that out. The intestacy law says half goes to the spouse and half goes to the children. And that's not what most people intend, right? So in that case, now that child is going to get half of the money, right?
Right.
And they could give it back to their parents, and you hope they do, but it's a complicated situation now that you've set up.
Yeah, I had another situation this week. It's been one of those interesting weeks. So instead of putting the person had a trust, right? And instead of putting this account in the name of the trust, they made it a transfer on death account.
Oh.
And it's not to all of the people that are the beneficiaries under the trust.
That's another problem. So that's why we say make sure your beneficiary, if they did that unintentionally, right, they could correct that by making sure you check all your beneficiary designations when you do your trust. Or did they intend to leave it to someone different? You don't know, right?
I think they intended to leave it to the trust. I just don't think that they understood. And that's why a lot of times we want to make sure that we're talking to the financial planners and we're talking to the CPAs and everything if there's ever a question, so that we make sure that, the things go the right way. I think probably what happened was the financial advisor was trying to make sure that this person had beneficiaries on there and didn't know that they had a trust. And just said, you know, well, who do you want to leave it to? And she said, my kids. And then she just left it to a couple of them, thinking, well, actually, they were the trustees. So I think she thought leaving it to them individually meant that she was leaving it to the trust.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not the way it worked out.
Debbie, right. Jay Marie, we have another caller. We have Tom in Clifton Park.
Good morning, Tom.
Good morning. I hope this is an easy question. It may be more orientated toward a will. But anyway, I'm looking for the definition, legal definition, in a will or trust or whatever, for the word securities. In a sentence, I'm leaving all of my securities to X. What constitutes a security? Mutual fund, a CD, etc.
Well, I would say securities is any stocks or any investments similar to that. So anything, a mutual fund. It doesn't really cover CDs or bank accounts. They would be different. Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
You did it.
Generally, an investment type of accounts, so stocks and mutual funds mainly.
Okay, terrific. You did it. Thank you very much.
Okay. That's awesome, huh?
That's easy great. One. Okay. Have a good day. Bye.
Thank you.
It's interesting because whenever he asked that, I just like Googled it. and it said securities are traded on financial exchanges around the world. So, I mean, I think there will be different interpretations, but when I think of securities, I'm thinking of stocks and bonds. I'm thinking like a brokerage account as opposed to checking, savings, CDs. But that was an excellent question.
Yeah, that was a great question. And I was wondering if there was, sometimes you can have a gray area, like if you left your securities to one person and everything else to someone else. Then that definition is going to be really important, right, as to who gets what. So if you did have a case like that, you may not want to rely on that. You may want to get more specific as to which person gets what assets.
Right. And you might want to say, and this is, again, not good, not bad, but I leave my brokerage account at this financial institution to this person, and then everybody else gets everything else. But then the problem with that is, what if you decide you're going to move your brokerage account, right?
That's right, and you don't necessarily remember to go back and change your will. So, yeah, that's one of the downsides of that.
Of being specific.
It's important to update your, or not even update, review your documents, right, every couple of years, we say to do that. Those things happen. You may have moved your brokerage account and not thought of changing your will. But if you do come in every few years to review everything, then that would get picked up.
Yeah, and, that's the thing. A lot of people set it and forget it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we have people that, what we were talking about before, that they have people that have passed away in their will, a lot of people that come in, did their wills because they were going on a trip for the first time and their kids were minors, and now their kids are 30 and 40. And
right.
They probably don't need a guardian anymore.
That's right. And also, they may not need to leave the money in trust for them, right? Maybe they left the money in trust until they're 35, and now they're 30, and they're kind of responsible. Or it could be the other way around, right?
Now they're not responsible, and maybe you want to put it into a trust.
So, it's different. It's different with every family. Yeah, and you don't know what your thoughts are going to be on that when your child's 2 versus when your child's, 21.
Right, or they have a shaky marriage. I have a lot of people that come in and their kids have a shaky marriage, and they're concerned about things like that, and we have to discuss that and figure out how that they could protect their assets going to their child. It's funny because you don't think about all these things, but people come in with the greatest questions, and then you sit there and go, wow, that's really interesting.
Right, that's right. They're great questions. A lot of times with this shaky marriage situation, we'll leave the money to that child in a trust to give it some extra protection. And then, that's going to keep it separate. So you need to keep those assets separate in case that child goes through a divorce in the future.
Right, and there's other issues there, but we don't go into those. But,
well, we don't. I'm not a divorce lawyer, but in general, I just, it's best to try and keep your inherited assets separate. Let's put it that way.
Definitely, because there are a lot of situations where there's just no control over it, and you want to make sure that you protect your assets as much and you protect your kids, right?
Yeah, you're protecting the money for your kids for their own use, and then you're also protecting it for your grandchildren. That's another time people come in to change their wills, is when they have grandchildren, they're going to come back in and they want to add some specific bequest to the grandchildren. So that's something that we do update when we meet you to review your documents.
I wanted to mention, too, you do not do not make a minor child, talking about grandkids, do not make a minor child the beneficiary of a retirement account. A lot of people think, well, it's great. You know, they're young. They don't have to take distributions until they're older, and they can stretch it over their life expectancy. I got a call from a financial advisor yesterday, and their client, her significant other passed away and left the retirement accounts to her kids. And now she's going to have to petition for guardianship because they're minors. She has to go to court, petition for guardianship, so that she can put those accounts in an account for her kids.
That's right, and that's a lot of trouble to go through, because you used to be able to stretch those out for that grandkid's whole lifetime. Now you have to pay it out over 10 years after they become an adult at 18, so you're not getting as long of a stretch as you would have before, so you have to see how big the account is. Is it worth going through all that to stretch out the account?
Right. It's not something that everyone thinks about. They think, well, you know, I'll leave it to the grandkids. And it's just, you're not doing anybody any favors. If you left it to a trust for the benefit of the grandkids, at least you're alleviating that whole situation with having to have a guardian appointed. Because she's like, but I'm their parent.
Yeah.
But I file taxes and claim them as an exemption. And I'm like, it doesn't matter. You're still going to have to petition for guardianship.
That's right. You are the parent, but in terms of inheriting assets in an estate, you have to be appointed as a guardian by the court. So that's an extra step that you have to go through.
And so we may have time for like maybe one more caller. If someone would like to give us a call at 518-476-5900, that's 518-476-5900. So give us a call, and we can answer some of your questions, hopefully.
And, that's right.
Yeah, that's what it's for. It's for calls, and the girls always get more calls than the boys.
Yes, we do. That's right. We've gotten a lot of calls today.
I know. And we like the calls because we'd like to answer your questions. And it unfortunately, what happens is somebody hears something and they're like, oh, I need to call and ask, and then it's the end of the show, and we can't get them in. So we still, like I said earlier, we still are meeting with people. We're meeting with them via Zoom, via conference calls, and in the office. So if you want to set up an appointment for a free consult, you can call Stacy at our office. The office phone number is 518-465-7581. She's at extension 126. Again, that's 518-465-7581. Stacy's at 126. She can put time on any of our calendars for a Zoom call, a conference call, or an in-person meeting in one of our four offices. And we can sit down, go over your documents if you already have documents, or if you don't have documents, kind of figure out what you need to have.
Debbie, Jay Marie, we have another caller. We have Larry in Albany.
Good morning, Larry.
Good morning. Actually, I have two quick questions for you. The first question is, that we have property in Vermont, which we own jointly with my brother, and he's put his half of the property in a family trust. We have not. So we do have a family, we do have trusts that we have set up with you, but we want to do something with this property in Vermont. Do we have to do it in Vermont, or are you able to do it in New York? And what do we have to bring to have it done if we have to do it in New York?
Well, we can do it for you. We need to do a new deed from the Vermont property into your trust. And we're not licensed in Vermont, but we use a company that can prepare deeds in all 50 states. So it's easier to go through us because we know your trust, right? And we know how we want the title to read. And we can easily do that for you.
Okay. Now, the second part of the question is also, we have two trusts. How do we decide which trust to put this thing into?
Well, that's going to depend, are they both irrevocable trusts?
Yes. Yes, they are.
Okay. If they're both going to protect assets the same, I mean, I'd have to look at both trusts to see why you had two trusts, if there's a reason why. But you basically, if you want to protect it, it needs to go in an irrevocable trust. As to which trust, we'd have to see, are the beneficiaries different? Are there differences that way as to why it should go in one versus the other? I mean, this is, I think you said, your family property, right? So
yes.
So I don't know if it's supposed to stay in the family and maybe go to your kids, not your spouse. That sometimes happens with family properties. And that it could be, that could be important as to who the beneficiaries are of the trust.
Okay. All right, so we'll have to come in for that. I'll have to bring, what, do I get a, I get the, oh, I don't have to get the Vermont deed. I just come in and you can get the deed for us, you said?
No. We need the Vermont deed, and then we'll have a new deed drawn up to put it into the trust.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And the second question was similar to what someone else asked in terms of what were securities in a brokerage account for wills and things. Now, a brokerage account, there are bonds and there are CDs, but they're sweep accounts that are put into, it says securities, and it's into sweep account. That's technically cash. Is that considered securities for estate purposes or will purposes?
I would consider the whole investment account, right, part of that investment. So if you have a Merrill Lynch account, you're right, it could have a cash part, a stock part, and a bond part. We would treat that all as one account when we're transferring it.
But even though if the will says I give all my securities to this person, that would still be considered securities, what's in the cash part of that account.
I would argue that it would be. You know, again, we don't want to leave it up to that loose of an interpretation, so we may specifically mention that account, or you know, we may draft it a little differently. But yeah, I would interpret securities as including that whole account.
Okay, thank you. You've been exceptionally helpful, and we'll have to give you a call to take care of that Vermont business.
Sure, sounds good.
Thank you.
Thank great. You. Have a great weekend. Yeah, the securities question is a very interesting question, and mm-hmm. I think that it depends on the interpretation that the person kind of intended. So a lot of times when people meet with us, we take copious notes and what they really mean, and we try to make sure that things are going where they need to go. I mean, the generic language that is in most wills is there's an article that disposes of your personal property, right? Mm-hmm. That's the, you know, the stuff in the house, your car, your jewelry, your guns, all that kind of stuff. And then there's the residuary estate, which usually is your cash, your stocks, your bonds, your property, and everything like that. And then it kind of goes out after that. So sometimes I think there's generic language that goes into wills and stuff like that that mm-hmm. may be confusing. And mm-hmm. if there was a question about that, so like if somebody said, no, they didn't mean that, they meant this, that would be something that would have to go to the courts.
It would
interpretation.
Be. Right. So that's why it's important to really have a good, idea of what you want. And like you said, we need to take notes and see what you intended. That could come back in a contest, right, to see what did you intend. Mm-hmm. Did you mean the whole brokerage account, right? Did you mean to leave the cash separately? So that, yeah, that could be a tricky interpretation if you did have to go to court.
And it's interesting because if you're looking at Medicaid planning, right, whenever you're looking at Medicaid planning, if someone's going into a nursing home, they always say the accounts that are readily available at the bank are counted as your assets, even if you have a joint person on them, whereas they say if stocks or bonds or stuff like that if you have an extra person on them, that's only half.
I know that's a rule that it doesn't really make much sense, right, why one's treated differently than the other. But you do have to be aware of that when we're doing Medicaid planning.
Right. And
go ahead.
I was going to say, so that's why you really need to go to a professional, especially if someone's in a nursing home and you're looking for Medicaid for them, or someone's looking to go into a nursing home, or you're looking to have someone stay home for community Medicaid, you really need to hire a professional that is used to dealing with all the lingo, as it were, so that we can make sure that we can protect as much of the assets as we possibly can.
Mm-hmm. That's right. You do. These words matter, and securities may mean different things to different people. So you have to have a lawyer who understands what you want done and can draft it specifically for your needs.
Yeah, it's interesting. In our will, like the generic language under Article 3rd said, the words tangible personal property, which is stuff in the halves, do not include money, bank accounts, bonds, stocks, securities, mutual fund shares, interest and partnerships, and other similar investments. Mm-hmm. So it separates out securities from stocks and mutual funds.
Right. That's very, very specific.
Mm-hmm. So that's something, again, I saw an article in the paper talking about, oh, you can do this online and you can do that online. And it goes back to the old adage, you get what you pay for. If you do your own will and your own power of attorney online, you're really taking a chance that you don't even have a valid document.
That's true. I had someone come in yesterday, and, well, it's similar. She had wills done through, sometimes you have free legal services through work. You know, you pay a little bit every month. And the will was just awful. It was one page. It really wasn't done correctly. That's another situation where it's better just to pay a little bit of money and make sure your will's done correctly.
Exactly. So, again, if you'd like to come in and visit us, the phone number at the office is 518-465-7581. Extension 126 is Stacy. She could put time on our calendars. We do offer a free consult, and if you've already got documents, we'll look at them and give you our suggestions. Some people come in and their documents are perfectly fine, and they're shocked, and they're like, wow. And that's the end of it for today.
Thanks for all the callers. Have a wonderful weekend.
Thanks. You guys have a great weekend. Stay warm and stay safe out there.
Thank you for listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. For more information on their services, please visit herzoglaw.com. If you'd like to speak with one of their attorneys, please contact the Albany office at 518-465-7581, the Saratoga office at 518-581-8131, or their Kingston office at 845-338-6405.